a very good afternoon. Welcome to Thursday's Kildare Focus. Hope we find you well. I'm glad to have you aboard. Between now and three, myself and Hannah will look to keep you informed and, dare I say it, a little entertained as well. Well, in just a moment, we're going to be speaking about the Jack and Jill Foundation and their upcoming Christmas fundraising appeal, which is just about to be launched with a great Christmas lineup for them to support the wonderful work they do in supporting parents of children with extremely special needs. And many Kildare children have been involved over the years in that, which is founded, of course, by Jonathan and his wife, many, Jonathan Irwin, and his wife many decades ago. More about that in a couple of minutes' time. Also on the programme today, we'll be talking about inheritance tax for those of you that have loads to leave, and to whom you might leave it, and what might be the implications of leaving it to them. We'll be hearing from John Lowe, the money doctor, in the programme as well, all going well. Fashion. The whole area of fashion. Should we be recycling? Or have we this overwhelming urge to be always buying new clothes? And what if we do, does it do for us? Or what might just having the second-hand ones do for us as well? Also, we'll be joined by a medical director, Dr. James Cutter, about Botox and filler affecting your skin and health long-term, as more and more, thousands, I would say, of Irish women and men, let's not be sexist about this, are pursuing what sometimes is the wrong thing, you know, known as the fish. No, it's the trout pouch, isn't it? Anyway, and also, given the weather we've had the last couple of days and damage caused by falling trees, etc., etc., who exactly is liable for that? We'll hear from managing partner at Maloney & Company, solicitors and personal injury law specialist, Liam Maloney, on that. Good Bannerman, I believe, there. Plus, the Beatles. Remember them? I certainly do. Hannah told me she knows who the Beatles are, even though they were 100 years before she was born. They're launching their last ever song tomorrow. And there's a bit of a video about it today. And Paul Mescal, former Kildare footballer and good Maynooth man, he has been nominated for yet another film award. Would you believe this very day? We'll tell you about that. And other bits and pieces as well as we go along. So that's what we've got for you. And don't forget, love to have your messages, love to hear from you, your thoughts on the issues we discussed. And indeed, yesterday in the programme, we were discussing the idea of why people, we all seem to be obsessed by our phones, can't leave them out of our hand. And if you'd like to do a little social experiment yourself, check how many people, when you're walking up your typical street, are actually walking with a phone in hand and looking at it. The days of, how's it going? Hello, how are you? People saluting each other is diminishing rapidly as people look on their phones. Watch your bus passing by. See how many people are looking down at their phones. And indeed, woe and betide them. If you're driving along the motorway, as I have frequently witnessed, and it's not an exceptional case either, look sideways. How often do you see somebody driving and texting at the same time or looking down? Shocking behaviour. But one listener got in touch with us via WhatsApp yesterday, so you can text or WhatsApp us on 0833 97 97 97 or email studio at kfmradio.com. And this listener said, it's such a shame that so many people, even when outdoors, are stuck on their phones. It gives the impression they don't wish to be disturbed. It also means missing out on what is going on around us. Between phones and coffee, both hands are often full, and many don't find it easy to properly relax as they're so accustomed to their hands being busy and occupied. Good point. Well made indeed. So if you'd like to get in touch with us on any matter like that, 0833 97 97 97, we're always delighted to hear from you. Bits and pieces coming in. Someone is just typing me at the moment, but I'll get to that in a few minutes' time. Now, we're going to begin, as I say, it's that time of year, Christmas. Can you believe it? As soon as Halloween was gone, boom, everything. Although the shops were well decorated already before that. Home and family are synonymous with Christmas, so we're told, and indeed they are. But for over 400 families in communities across the country, being able to have their child at home for the festive season with the help of their Jack and Jill nurse is even more important. And that can't be done without significant funding. And while Jack and Jill is supported by government grants, it is never enough, nor near enough. Mary O'Brien has been with us in the past, Mary Ann, And Jonathan Irwin has been with us in the past, telling us over a number of years how much they rely on you, the public out there, to help these amazing children and their wonderful parents. And that help goes on. So, it's that time of year. Let's hear more, because I'm joined by Deirdre Walsh, who's head of retail at the Jack and Jill Foundation, just up the road from us here in Johnstown. Good afternoon, Deirdre.
Good afternoon, Clem. Thanks for having me on the show.
I will. You're a bit faint, Deirdre. Let me check. Is that my headphones? Probably is. Say hello to me again, Deirdre.
Hello, Clem. Can you hear me now?
Sure, you're sitting on my knee now at this stage. Okay.
Very good.
This, what I was saying there by way of the intro, I'm sure you can articulate it even better.
Yeah, well, I suppose Jack and Jill is a nationwide charity that funds and provides in-home nursing care and respite support to families caring for children up to the age of six with neurodevelopmental delay associated with severe cognitive delay. And I suppose what that means is that we look after children who are tube-fed, typically oxygen-dependent, take seizures, require medication. And it makes a huge difference to the families. And we also provide end-of-life care to all children up to the age of six, irrespective of diagnosis. But we do need to raise $6.8 million per year. And it's down to, I suppose, 25% from the government, but the rest is the general public. And they've been fantastic support to us over the years. But we're asking this year, coming up to Christmas, to raise another million.
Right, hang on there now a minute and back up the bus for just a second, because, Deirdre, you just mentioned a figure there. Would you repeat that figure again?
$6.8 million?
$6.8 million?
Yes, that we have to raise every
year. And as I said at the top of that, you have to raise that. The government gives you 25% only, is that all?
Yes, 25%. And the rest comes then from the community, from the general public through donations and from our corporate supporters and through our retail.
Well, can I just say well done to people of Ireland who constantly dig out organisations like yourself. Because if you weren't doing this, the onerous responsibilities would fall on our public health system. And we know what that's like.
Yes, absolutely. We are kind of stepping into a gap there to help our families, I suppose, have the time to do normal things that you and I take for granted. Things like going to the park, going shopping, going to a nativity play, and even a night's sleep. Like, some of our children don't sleep, and our families are very sleep deprived. So some of our hours are being used just so that families can get a night's sleep.
And Lord knows, if your sleep is disturbed maybe temporarily by a child who's crying or a child who's sick or whatever else, you know you're going around doped, literally.
Absolutely.
Not knowing whether you're coming or going. But if you're one of these parents whose child has this, you know, is neurologically challenged in extensively and they need physical, psychological and every support, this is 24 hours around the clock, 7 days, 365, is it not?
Absolutely. They don't get a break. And I suppose that's what we do. We get a nurse into the home so that these families can have a break. And we all, a lot of us have had children coming home with newborns and know how hard it is for the first few months when you're sleep deprived. But our families are dealing with that daily. A lot of our families are dealing with it daily.
Oh,
so it's
God.
Very difficult.
Oh, it's more than difficult. So when the nurse comes in, just give us a broad outline of what the nurse would do in terms of support.
Well, the nurse comes into the home and looks after the child who needs the support, and then the remainder of the family are free to do what they need, they want to do, I suppose. They're able to do basic things. As I said, like going to the grocery store, it's so hard to go to the grocery store with one healthy child in tow, a toddler or whatever. But if you have a sick child, you just can't get out to do that. So the nurse comes into the home to allow the parents the freedom to go out and do normal things.
Yeah, shocking altogether. Now, that's an incredible amount of money. You're launching, as of course, having mentioned, €6.5 million, and you fund 55,000 hours of in-home nursing care support to children with those highly complex and life-limiting medical conditions around the county, around the country, and of course, in particular, also here in Kildare.
Yeah, we have 35 children in County Kildare that we look after. We have 400 nationwide, 400 plus actually nationwide. So 35 is quite a high number in County Kildare. But what we're trying to do is raise this 1 million to provide 55,000 hours of home nursing care coming up to Christmas. And we're doing it through, I suppose, donors and donations from the general public. We're doing it through corporate donations, community fundraising, but also through our shops and through merchandise we have online this Christmas.
Now, you are, of course, you have the Jack and Jill Christmas collection and gift shop, and it includes many, many things. Give us a flavour of what we can get. I presume we can access that by going onto your website.
Yes, you can access them all on jackandjill.ie. And our candle and diffuser sets and our tote bags will be in our Jack and Jill stores, which we have 16 of nationwide. The candles and diffuser sets are designed by Paul and William Costello, and they're a beautiful set, but they also have the added thing of a little box at the end, or a can at the end of the wick once you burn the candle, and inside that is a costume jewellery pendant designed by Betty and Biddy, and you also have the chance of winning one of two Choopy necklaces, diamond and gold Choopy necklaces, which is kindly donated by Choopy. They're retailing for £29.50 each, or two for £55, and they're flying out, which I'm delighted to tell you.
Oh, that's great. There's so many things on it. Teacher gift cards, the gift of time cards, designed yes. Christmas cards from Kildare artist Laura Dempsey.
Yes, Pickled Pom Pom is Laura Dempsey from Athangan, and she has designed our set of cards this year, and it's a pack of 12 cards for €7, which is excellent value.
Okay, can I sum it up any better than saying every Christmas purchase and donation is a gift of time by funding and supporting home nursing care hours that make a real difference to local families. Now, lads, I don't have to just, you know, expand on this anymore. We're not talking about someone with a sniffle here. We're talking about these children with these very complex and neurologically challenging conditions, which in most cases leaves them entirely helpless and dependent on who? Their parents. 24 hours a day, who but for the likes of Jack and Jill would be just rendered into exhaustion, if and of course they're exhausted already, 365 days a year. Have a little thought if you were faced with that challenge and how much you might appreciate the help. £6.5 million a year it takes to fund, to deal with all of this. So they only get a quarter of it from the government, as the government steps out like Lanigan's ball rather than stepping in again, which it should be in this and many other cases. So do what you can. It's Jack and Jill Foundation. You can get them on the website, which is, remind me again, Deirdre?
It's jackandjill.ie.
Jackandjill.ie. You'll find everything there. And of course, you can always donate directly as well. And you'll be hearing plenty about this between now and Christmas in our advertising breaks over the next couple of weeks, because we want to help to increase awareness out there. Listen, regards to you, all your wonderful staff out there, and in particular, these heroic nurses who do such wonderful work.
Okay, thank you very much, Pam.
Not at all. That's Deirdre Walsh, who is Head of Retail at the Jack and Jill Foundation. You can find about their Christmas gift area and help with their work by going to jackandjill.ie, and they're up the road in Johnstown on that. Now, we talked about some messages regarding the stuff that we had on yesterday. Well, one listener says, regarding being stuck on your mobile phone, my screen time is shocking. 5 hours already on it today. How can you spend 5 hours on your screen time on your phone? That is shocking. I think you need to think about addiction in there. And remember the advice we got, setting specific times aside only when you look at your phone, turn off the notifications. But it'd be well worth all of us, and I speak myself in this case as well. I'm inclined that once I sit down in the evening to land the phone on my lap and be checking through everything from work emails mostly, but everything else that's going on in the world as well. Seeing, for example, can we, regarding work, it could be company stuff, it could be to do with the program here, any interesting topics coming up we can bring you. But at the end of the day, it's too much time, and we need to recover the art of conversation again. I think there'll come a time when, you know, Do you remember when all the neighbours used to drop into each other? That's practically gone as well. You know, and certainly when I was a child and grown up, whether it was in the Hermitage in Ennis or in Clarecastle in County Clare, there was always a case of people dropping in for a chat and to sit around talking all evening. I think even if people dropped in now, it's everybody with phones on their laps looking at it and, yeah, right, okay, grunting, looking at the television. And indeed, that's another area that if you frequent a pub, how many of you are familiar with the idea that the television is on, you mightn't be able to hear the sound, but everyone's looking at the pictures and conversing through the television set at the top of the shelf or whatever else. Marion in Solids. Marion, it's good to hear from you again. It's been a long, long time. Back to my Kildare Today mornings. But good to hear you're out there. And you say you're recovering from Halloween and you throw in a picture with lots of pumpkins and other matters as well. You're not the only one. I spent about, well, did I tell you this yesterday, 25 or 30 quid on stuff expecting a tsunami of kids. But a combination of the weather and indeed, I believe that a certain two who were going to visit me, and I had been flagged about this, had indulged way too much in other parties during the day and weren't unable to attend. So I've had to recycle some of the stuff I bought, like apples and oranges and monkey nuts. Are they still called monkey nuts? And but packages of chocolates and things like that, some of them are in here in KFM. Staff are happy that it was raining out there. And other items, well, I'll wait till the weekend and then I'll pass them off to the kids when they've recovered again. So keep your messages coming. 0833 97 97 97.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Now, still to come, we'll be speaking with a clinic medical director about the whole area of how Botox and filler could affect your skin health long term, with so many people availing of it these times, not just here in Ireland but also abroad. And also, who pays the compensation bill for fallen trees on public roads during storm events which might cause damage or otherwise? Just ahead of our fashion item with Hannah. It's a big, big day for the Beatles. Believe it or not, I said to Hannah earlier, Hannah, have you ever heard of the Beatles? She said, of course I have. Now, I think she thought I was talking about insects, but I was talking about the pop group, because believe it or not, the 60s Wonder Group have released a new short film ahead of tomorrow's premiere of their new and last ever song, which will be called Now and Then. The film is also called Now and Then. It's in the form of a documentary and it's 12 minutes long. The last Beatles song tells the story of how surviving Beatles Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr worked with the Apple Corporation and filmmaker Peter Jackson to bring the song into the 21st century. You might have seen something of this on TV last night on RTE. Now and Then, it's released this very day at 2 o'clock, 26 minutes ago, was pieced together from a demo recorded by the late John Lennon in 1979 and using new technology, including artificial intelligence. The track features all four Beatles, including guitarist the late George Harrison, who died in 2001. Right, OK. George Harrison died in 2001, 22 years ago. Only seems like yesterday, for God's sake. Right, what else have we got anyway? The music video for the song is directed by Lord of the Rings director Jackson. Debuts tomorrow afternoon. So speaking about directing the video, he said, when Apple asked me to make the music video, I was very reluctant. I thought my next few months would be hell of a lot more fun if that tricky task was someone else's problem. But they made it. And such are the wonders of artificial intelligence. I saw a snap from the video last night and it comes across as all four Beatles in the studio together on their prime, even though they weren't together. But such is the video magic of artificial intelligence. They can do that, have all four singing this song, and it's released today at 2 o'clock. As well as that over 50 years ago, by the way, the song was first brought out. And here we are again. As well as the new song and the re-release of the band's Red and Blue albums next week, it also marks this year the 60th anniversary of the Beatles' only ever Irish concerts in Dublin and Belfast. Do you remember the hysteria, lads, in relation to that at all? I wonder. Oh, God, lordy, lordy. Okay, we'll put a defer our fashion item for a moment because I'm pleased to say that the Money Doctor has joined us. John Lowe, good afternoon again.
Good morning, Clem, or good afternoon, exactly. Apologies, I got a little bit distracted and derailed.
It's all right. I'm delighted to hear someone else think it's morning because that's usually my thing in relation to that, John. Now, John, the whole area of inheritance tax and how this might work or other, this is a very complex field, is it not?
It's not really, Clem. I mean, there are three different bands of inheritance. I do lots of seminars, webinars, and I always say to the audience that you go home to your parents and tell them that John Lowe of Money Doctor, not AZ, said that you can give us $335,000 and you don't have to die. So that's the first category, $335,000.
But it's not as clear and as easy as that, is it? Are there not terms and conditions attached?
No, there's none at all. It's all tax-free.
As long as you're a son or a daughter?
As long as you're a son or a daughter or a foster child as well now.
But it gets complicated, does it not then, if you want to leave it to others, related or otherwise?
Well, yes and no. Again, the B category is brother, sister, aunt, uncle, nephew, niece, grandchild. So you can give any of those categories $32,500 tax-free. Now, bear in mind, once you pass the threshold, so if you've got $500,000 you want to pass to an only child, then, you know, $165,000 is going to be taxed at 33% capital acquisition tax. So, you know, there's a third of that basically going, which is about, what, 500,000, roughly, 500,000. So, and then the same with the category of the B category. So, say you have an aunt who dies, who leaves you, you know, 32,500, and that's tax-free. The following year, another aunt dies, and she also leaves you 32,500. Well, aggregates count, and therefore you'd be taxed fully on the second 32,500 at 33%. So again, that's about 11 grand that you'd have to pay in tax.
Right, okay. And that's in... What if you want to leave it to the neighbour?
That's the third category, Clem. That's you, me, like your favourite broadcaster. You might decide, I want to leave Clem a sum of money tax-free. Well, that amount is $16,250. And again, aggregates count. So if all your listeners decide to kind of come up together and give you $16,250, only one of them, you get tax-free. The rest of you pay 33% capital acquisition tax.
And 33% is a fair whack because, say you left a house that's worth $300,000 and you don't qualify for, or you only qualify for, we'll say $16,000 or whatever else, the rest then is computed
that's
by the
right,
revenue.
Yeah.
As
a lot of people have to actually sell that asset in order to pay the capital acquisition tax. So if it was that situation, it would be the $16,500, you've now got, what, $283,500. That's the guts of, you know, $95,000 that you'd have to find. And if you haven't got it, you've got to sell the asset in order to get it.
Yeah, could I just make an appeal to anybody out there who's thinking of leaving me a house? Don't, don't, please. Unless you're a long-lost son or daughter and want to leave it to the old parent or whatever. But don't. I don't want to have to go through the hassle. Can I come back again to the nephews and nieces?
Yeah.
Is there not a way that they must live, if they live with you, for at least 3 years or a number of years, that yeah, can exempt them from paying astronomical amounts of tax?
Well, there's a dwelling house exemption rule, of course. That's where you say you are living with your granny, and eventually you're there now 4 years looking after her, and she decides to give you the house. That's outside of inheritance, but there's a few rules and regulations, and one is that you have to live there for the next 6 years, and there's obviously a clawback if you do move within the 6 years. So, you know, it's outside of your the inheritance net. You're not restricted to the, in a granny's case, 32,500. you get the, if the property's worth half a million, then you get half a million.
Right, but you cannot sell for 6 years. Do you have to have been living with them for 3 years?
Prior to their demise, yes.
Right.
That is another rule. So, and you don't know when the person is going to, you know, demise.
John, between you and me now, and the revenue won't be listening at all,
yes.
How do the revenue know that whether you were living for the 3 years or not?
Well, because when the property is conveyed, there's lots of, registrations made and, kind of forms filled in to state that this is now being conveyed from a grandmother to a person. And there will be an notional amount for a value, plus there will be stamp duty payable. That's all recorded. So all these records are there for... So they will.
Yeah, but what if I tell the revenue that, say, John Lowe, you're my granddaddy, and you're leaving me the house, and you state, Clem has been living and taking care of me for the last 3 years.
Well, this will show up, Clem, first of all, in the will, number one. And if you have died, obviously, with a will rather than intestate. And the second thing is, whoever the executor or executrix is, they will be filling out a form, an SA2 form, which is from the probate office, of all the assets of the estate. And they will state that this house here is under the dwelling house exemption rule, whereby this nephew was given the property because he's been living there for the last 4 years. And he intends to stay there for the next 6 years, and they will take a note of that in revenue.
Okay, well, now, folks, the matter is inheritance isn't a straightforward thing. So whatever you're intending to do with all your great assets, those of you who are millionaires out there and otherwise, but even, I'm only being flippant there, even if it's simply a couple living in the family home where the children have gone, and everything else, and maybe you have some of the circumstances applicable that we've been talking about, you need to take professional advice. Because
you do.
Leaving really? The house to somebody, as John just pointed out earlier, is not necessarily the goose that laid the golden egg. It could be the goose that laid the golden tax bomb on top of you as well. So,
correct.
And you can find out more by going onto John's website, themoneydoctor.ie, where all that information is available and much more, John, isn't it?
It is indeed, or moneydoctors.ie. Either one will get into the website. But the most important thing is really make a will. Don't die intestate. 70%, Clem, of the country do not have a will. And they're absolutely overwhelmed by the claptrap and the legal jargon that goes on. You don't have to make a will in a solicitor's office. You don't have to have a solicitor execute it. You can do it yourself. You can. Once you have an actual will, there was a very famous case there a couple of weeks ago. Aretha Franklin died about 7-8 years ago, and she left a slip of paper inside the folds of a sofa. And they found this little slip of paper, and it was signed, dated, witnessed, and it basically said that this person was going to get all her assets, her estate. And so the family contested it, and they brought this little piece of paper and whoever the beneficiary was to court. He won because they said it was a valid will. She signed it, she had a witness, and she dates it. That's all you need.
All right.
So, I mean, the thing is, make a will. That's what I would.
There's the advice. About. And while it mightn't be as important if you're just husband and wife, because no children, everything goes to the wife. But when the wife dies, or vice versa, but when either of those dies, well, who's it going to go to? And if there's no one for it to go to, it can lead to court cases for years. Or the government. Yeah. We talked about the stepping out in so many cases when they should be stepping in and funding things. The most efficient way the government act is in stepping in to take away your assets if there's no one to give them to in terms of tax. So make those wills and do all that other thing. And John Lowe, themoneydoctor.ie, where you'll get moneydoctors.ie, where you'll get all that information and much more about how to handle your tax affairs. John, good talking to you again, and thanks
for
your
attention. Thank you very much, Glenn.
All right, goodbye to you.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan.
Okay, still lots to do on the programme. We're just a bit behind time now, so let's move on. Why do we crave brand new clothes? I don't anyway. And how can we resist the urge to buy them? Oh, I certainly resist the urge to buy them. Oh yeah, look at my wardrobe and there's outfits there from Woodstock back in 68, like, you know, because it cannot come back into fashion again. Switching half our clothes in each of our wardrobes to pre-loved, I hate that term. Look, second-hand could prevent carbon emissions equivalent to those produced by 261,000 flights from London to Greece. So Oxfam says. So why do we buy brand new clothes? As I say, I'm still wearing the stuff that I bought in 69 for Woodstock and then moving on into the 70s and the hippie guild and stuff, flower power. I was a flower child. Were you, Hannah Kelly, a flower child? Hello, Hannah Kelly. Come in. There you are. Now, you're not a flower child, Hannah.
No, I'm not.
Okay. That's, I tell you, you've missed, you don't know what you've missed, being born in the 90s and stuff like that, you know. The magic of the 60s to 70s. So according to this latest thing that we've seen online, what's the whole attraction of buying brand new clothes when we know it's bad for the environment anyway?
Well, I think there is a reason why we refer to shopping as retail therapy. You know, whether it's going out top grabbed on your lunch break or designer bag you've had your eye on for months, fashion acquisitions in particular have the power to lift your mood thanks to the chemical dopamine that it provides.
What's dopamine?
So dopamine is the happy chemical in your brain. And as cognitive psychologist and business consultant Dr. Carolyn Mayer says, it is known as the reward agent as well.
But how can you be happy and have dopamine flooding out your ears if you're spending money? I mean, that should be miserable. But another thing comes into, aside from the happy thing and the dopamine of buying you, peer pressure is a very important effect, isn't it? Do we all want to look like each other?
I think peer pressure does come into it. It might not be wanting to look like each other, but I think there's more of an emphasis on people wanting to look individual and expressing themselves through clothes. So kind of that need is kind of the reason why maybe we buy clothes.
Yeah, but Hannah, isn't it all such a waste? I mean, this kind of thing is, it's in fashion today, it's not in fashion tomorrow. I notice, for example, that our flares, our bell bottoms, as I used to call them in my old age, are they back in fashion again?
They are back in fashion. I bought flares a few years ago now and I still have them.
And do you call them flares?
I'd call them flares.
No, they're bell bottoms.
Apparently, some say bell bottoms, some say flares.
Right, well, I'm telling you it's bell bottoms. Now, never mind your newfangled old guff about, you know, child of the 90s and stuff like that. You're only learning your fashions from looking at photos and things like that. But I mean, ultimately, are we not all victims of really the fashion industry extracting lots and lots of money from us by deciding this is in fashion today? We had a skinny trend for the last couple of years where you'd hardly get your foot into your trousers, they were so tight, and now we're going for the broader picture again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I do not feel that you're a fashion victim, no?
I think I am a fashion victim. You know, when I was younger, I would have the tendency to do online shopping almost every day, getting parcels delivered every day, especially during COVID.
Right.
So now I'm glad to say I've kind of recovered from that addiction. And I'm definitely trying to make use of secondhand fashion.
I'm delighted to hear that. I'll tell your parents that you've got sense at last.
Yeah,
now, what's this kind of, how we can start in dealing with the whole thing, a term that's used, shopping your wardrobe?
Yeah, so basically shopping your wardrobe, it's re-looking at your wardrobe and kind of figuring out if you can restyle or upcycle your outfit or even just changing it a bit if you're creative and know how to use a sewing machine. And also we can do swapping clothes with friends because then it's new to you.
Do you do that?
Yeah, I do.
You do not? You
yes,
don't?
I do.
Go to your friend and say, can I have a loan of your jacket?
Yeah, and if they don't, like, if I don't want anything in my wardrobe, I'll take pictures and send it to my friends and say, do any of you want anything here? And that's kind of the new...
You're swapping clothes?
Yeah.
Oh, how weird. how weird is that? I mean, wearing somebody else's cast-offs, oh, for God's sake. Do you shop in second-hand shops ever?
Yeah, I do.
So-called charity shops.
That's my main source of getting clothes now.
Well, I have to say, the two greatest things I ever bought, I bought a full-length sheepskin suede coat in an Oxfam shop in Cork 20 years ago. I still have it. It's the warmest. You could go around in your underpants, if you excuse the expression, and nothing else, with just this on, and you'd never be cold. And the other thing, get this now, Hannah Kelly, I've got a brand new pair, I mean brand new pair, of Skechers suede hiking boots for a tenner in a charity shop 2 years ago.
See, that's the good thing about, you can find such good gems in charity shops.
Yeah.
And for 3/4 of the price almost. And as well, like, they're good quality and they're brand new pretty much.
All right, okay. I must ring you up. Have you got a loan of a couple of old jackets you could give me and stuff like that, given that you're into swapping clothes? Anyway, some of the research on retail therapy. Listen, start by looking in your wardrobe. Don't be a victim of fashion. If you like it and it suits you, wear it. And that's the answer to that. That's thanks, Hannah Kelly.
Thank you.
Producer on the programme. Now we're going to be moving along in a moment because we're going to be talking about who's liable for trees falling on top of the road or whatever else. Landowners might want to be aware about that. Or if you have been impacted by it yourself. But also another interesting topic. Could tweakments, as they're called, like Botox and filler, affect skin health long term? What the experts would like us to know is a very interesting topic in relation to that. Because Botox and fillers are among the most popular injectables for unwanted skin sagging and aging. But what does it mean for your health long term? Because business is booming for clinics offering non-surgical aesthetic treatments, and the desire for plump, youthful looking skin seemingly trumps fears of exits, bad results or medical complications. Injections of botulinum toxin. Because the stuff, lads, It's known as Botox, but that's its full name. And dermal fillers are the most common non-surgical cosmetic procedures worldwide, with global sales of such treatments currently sitting $60 billion. Okay, lads, let's move on to the next one, so, because we're going to take that item maybe tomorrow, but we won't do it now, because I want to move on to... Jesus, lads. Injecting poison into your skin so that you lose a couple of wrinkles. Wrinkles are life's experience. Global sales, $60 billion. All right. Our next guest apparently is not available at the moment, so we'll come to that maybe on tomorrow's programme, which is all grand, because legal claims in Ireland are often taken against landowners and occupiers under the law of negligence by motorists and pedestrians injured by fallen trees. And you know, the kind of weather we've had lately, I don't have to tell you more about that. Liam Maloney is Managing Partner of Maloney & Company Solicitors and Personal Injury Law Specialists based here in Naas. Good afternoon, Liam.
Good afternoon, Clement. Thanks for having me on.
You're more than welcome. Are you still Chair of some European body as well?
Yeah, I'm Vice President of the European Personal Injury Lawyers Association, so we get to learn about different legal systems in Europe and different cases that arise.
Right. Can I just ask you one question? Just say a yes or no. Are you Willie's son?
I am.
You know, I tell you one thing. I'm from Ennis.
I know that.
Well, you know that.
You're
so
from the Turnpike?
We don't need to go any further. The Turnpike and the Magpies. Then.
Us Clare people up in Kildare have to stick together. Can't?
Yeah, I played darts so often with one of your nephews in the O'Connell Bar, as it used to be called, just off the square in Ennis, many, many years ago. Michael, I think it might have been. Now, tell me about this. When trees fall during the type of weather that we've been having, who's liable?
Well, this is something that my firm has come across on many occasions previously, unfortunately, because not only in bad weather, but certain other times when people unfortunately are injured or they suffer a loss, if there's damage to their car, they're driving along, minding their own business, and a tree comes down from an adjoining property. The issue then arises as to who is legally responsible. And in those circumstances, the law provides, there is a statutory provision in the Roads Act, and that imposes duties on the owner of lands to take reasonable steps to ensure that all trees, hedges and other vegetation like hanging branches aren't a hazard to persons using the public road. And that would impose, that imposes a legal duty on landowners to be prudent, to be careful, and to ensure that they carry out regular inspections of trees.
And Liam, sorry for cutting across you, that's understandable, but surely the landowner can't be held responsible for a tree blowing over in a storm that lands on top of somebody's car or contributes to an accident, can they?
Well, they can be held responsible, and I've been involved in cases where such for such responsibility has been accepted by their insurers. See, there is a, there is also a common law duty on landowners to take steps, and that step includes hiring an arborist. So if you have a, if you're a farmer and the farmers are well aware of this potential liability on their part, they would regularly have to carry out inspections of trees, particularly those trees that are just abut the public road, to ensure that they don't collapse. So if it is apparent following an inspection by a prudent landowner that the tree is at risk of collapse, if there's fungi on it, the farmer will know the sign of decay. The duty is on the farmer to remove that tree, to cut it down safely, to ensure that nobody is injured. So there have been in cases in the courts, legal responsibility has been placed on landowners if they have failed to carry out those measures and someone is injured as a result.
All right, I can appreciate that, although I'm sure there's plenty of argument would come in at the end of the day when last I inspected it. It was lovely and healthy and things like that. It just seems like, yeah, circumstances that would prevail in that would have to be really teased out. Is that applicable then if I have a big tree in my front garden and it falls over and clocks someone in the back of the ear as they're passing by?
That would be the same responsibility is on you as the same responsibility is on a farmer. You're the owner or occupier. It could even extend to a tenancy. So if you owned a house and you had a number of trees on it, and we'll say you collected the rent every month, but you never went out and inspected it because they're paying the rent and everything is fine, and somebody is injured as a result of a tree that collapses, the same legal responsibility could be placed on you. Now, in practical advice to any farmer, the advice I would give is, or any landowner in that situation, is to engage an arborist. They're actually not that expensive. They're quite reasonably priced to do inspections, and they will do a very detailed assessment of any trees. And to be fair, the courts don't impose absolute responsibility on you. If you can show, well, we carried out regular checks of these trees, we had an arborist in, he did an assessment, there's the report, everything was fine, and then liability would not be imposed. Okay. But if it's apparent, so if you haven't carried out the inspection, if it's not apparent, obvious and apparent that the tree is at risk of collapse, then you could, in those circumstances, escape responsibility. But it's really important that farmers and landowners do that. It doesn't cost a lot of money, and you don't want to be in a situation where someone unfortunately suffers an injury and you're then held legally responsible.
I'm getting out the hatchet this evening. The three trees in my front lawn are coming down. Inwards, before the neighbours start claiming damages or whatever else like that. Listen, your father was a very impressive man, particularly in his work with the Shannon Group, as might have been known differently at the time. But that's and I'm proud to say I won a Clare League soccer medal with St Michael's over the many years as well. Liam Maloney, managing partner of Maloney and Company Solicitors and personal injury law specialist, specialising in that whole area, and they're based in Nice. You can find their website very, very easily. And also, of course, chairman of the Europe Group as well. Liam, great talking to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Clem.
All right, good morning. Good afternoon even to you in terms of that. Now, to finish up today, a bit of good news about Kildare footballer and indeed superb actor Paul Mescal, because he, along with Andrew Scott and Jodie Comer, remember her from the great series Killing Eve, they're among this year's BIFA nominees. That's BIFA. Hannah Kelly, you being a film buff, tell us more about this good news.
Yeah, so for their roles in Andrew Hay's All of Us Strangers, which has received 14 nods, Fleabag actor Scott, 47, has been nominated in the Best Lead Performance category, while Normal People's Mescal, 27, is nominated for Best Supporting Performance. And Killing Eve actress Comer, 30, is a nominee in the Best Lead Performance category for The End We Start From, which follows a young family torn apart in the aftermath of an environmental crisis.
Did you watch that series, Killing Eve?
No, I haven't. My parents are big fans of it, and oh, I was meaning to watch it.
I'm with your parents on that. Yeah, I watched both series of it. She's a complete psycho in it. She's a wonderful actress altogether.
She is.
I didn't realise she was as young as 30, but she comes across as older in it. Now, among those competing against Paul Mescal for the Best Supporting Performance category is a singer and an actress.
Yeah, so Alexandra Burke for a pretty red dress, The Crown's Amir El Masri for In Camera, Arrested Development actress Aaliyah Shawkat for Drift, and Inherent Vice star Catherine Waterston for The End We Start From. So a good lineup there.
Are you a fan of Paul Mescal?
I am. I saw his film After Sun, directed by Charlotte Wells, and I thought it was a beautiful film. I did cry at the end of it. So.
Oh. Did you?
Yeah.
Right. And what about Normal People?
I haven't seen Normal People.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's having amazing success, isn't he?
Yeah, since Normal People, he's just blown up.
He's become a fashion icon now as well.
He has, with his GAA shorts.
He's wearing his GAA, is it Maynooth GAA shorts around, and some of the major fashion companies have picked up on that. Quite remarkable for the guy who played minor in under 21 football with Kildare. But congratulations to Paul Mescal. Great news by another Lily White. And thank you, Hannah Kelly.